This is an interview with Donald Barth as part of the Austenmere project. The interview took place at Don's home in Fig Tree on Friday the 26th of September 2014, and the interview was conducted by Sue Bowden. Now, Don, I'm going to ask you to give me your full name and date of birth.
Donald Neil William Barth, date of birth is the 14th of the 7th, 1948.
And where were you born?
I was actually born in Coaldale District Cottage Hospital.
And could you tell me your mother's full name?
My mother's full name is Jean Mary Lett. That was her maiden name.
And her date of birth?
Her date of birth was the 17th of July, 1911.
And what about your father's full name and date of birth?
My dad's date of birth was... His full name is Roland Robert Barth, and he was born in Wollongong, and his date of birth was the 23rd of June, 1908.
Okay, thank you. So today we're going to range over your memories of Austenmere, and so let's start with your childhood. We can work chronologically to start with. You were born, as you just said, at Coaldale Hospital. Can you describe where your family lived at that time?
Yes, at that particular time, we lived in 7 Oceana Parade, Austenmere, which was a house that my grandfather, Donald McCaskill Lett, built. And we lived in that house, most of... I lived there right up from when I was born in 1948. I lived there, and then I left when I was 14 to go to school in Dubbo. In that house, they raised a family of 7. I have four sisters, Ruth, Jeanette, June, Gwen, and the girls were all raised there. And I have two brothers, Roland and William, and they were both raised there also. It was a lovely house. It was more like a Californian bungalow with the veranda completely around three sides. And as the family grew, we put on an extra bedroom, and that was put on by Matty Muir. He was a local builder, just lived about 8 doors up from us in Oceana Parade. The house still stands there today, and I believe it's only it's either the original owner or the second owner that we sold it in around about 1968, I think we sold the house, but it was made into flats after we sold it.
Right.
And yeah.
And was it typical of the homes in that street?
Oh, very much so. Yes, I believe my grandfather built. He built over 100 homes in Austenmere, and it's a typical of his type of building, the bungalow type building. In that particular street, though, particularly on the high side and further up, they were very similar to that. Different types. There was a Miss Jagger. Miss Blanche actually lived on the corner in a two-storey house. And that was more or less a brick home that would have been built later on. And as we progressed up the street, there was a weatherboard home belonging to the Pattersons actually lived there, but it belonged to Mrs. Jagger. And then there was Duggan's, that was another home there. And that was sometimes rented out for holiday use. And then the Harrises, Mr. and Mrs. Harris, he was a district sheriff and ex-Air Force man. And then our house, number 7, and then we had a spare block of land which was owned by the Outlook Guest House, and then was eventually sold off, and Armstrong's, Jack Armstrong and his wife lived there and their family. They had great difficulty with that, with the block, because it had a, they had a natural spring coming out of it, and that took quite a bit of figuring it out, how to get around it. And then as we progressed up there, the Robertses lived next door to the Armstrongs. The Robertses, they actually managed the, they were probably the first managers of the Outlook. And then as we progressed, they lived, when they retired, they moved across the road into that, that house there. And I was ever, I only ever knew them living in that house. I never knew them as the managers of the Outlook. And then a block of flats was built in my early days there. And then a Mrs. Robertson lived on the corner in my grandparents' house that... my grandfather built that back in the 1920 would have built that house there, but that has since been demolished and turned into some townhouse type houses.
So your grandfather was a builder?
He was a builder, yes, he was a builder.
Do you know when he went to Ostermere?
He came to Ostermere. He came to Ostermere about 1912.
Mm.
So, yeah, they were in Ostermere about 1912.
And was that as a builder?
Yes, as a builder.
Right.
Yes, he came down there and he started building, and he, as I said, he built numerous houses in Ostermere. 128, I think it was, in his building years. That would have been from 1912 up till about the late 30s. I think he gave up the building, and then he went into the Keswick Guest House.
So that's a whole other story. So let's go back to your... That's really interesting. And, and it's interesting that I've actually interviewed Molly Armstrong, and I also have interviewed Marge Bray, who lived... I can't remember the number of Oceana Parade up the other end.
Yes, up.
It was a, she had her family built a holiday house, and whether it was your father who built it, it'd be interesting to know. About four from the corner on the high side. Anyway, so there's all these little connections up there.
There are. Yes.
So we might come back and talk about your recollections of Ostermere as a place for guest houses, but let's go back to your early days. Can you give us a picture of your childhood growing up in Ostermere? What were the sort of seven children, so there were lots of things happening in your family, but growing up in Oceana Parade, what were your... give us a snapshot of how you... recall your childhood. What is your first memory of Ostermere, for example? Well, your youngest, your earliest memory, which is going to be Ostermere probably, because that's where you were born, really.
Yeah, yeah. My earliest of memory is actually at our house, and my sister's actually going off to school, and they we tended to... do lots of things in Ostermere. One of my early recollections was Mum taking me into Wollongong on the bus to get a pair of shoes. And it must have been just a few years after the war, where they still had had the coupons. And we got all the way into Wollongong and she forgot the coupons. So,
do you remember where you went to shop in Wollongong?
Oh, yeah, we did actually go to, I think there was a Marcus Clarke's, was a large shop, like a department store. Also Mum used to take me down to, if after the dentist, if I'd had a lot of dental work, severe dental work, So she would take me down to the lower end of Crown Street, and there was a disposal store there. And she bought me a set of binoculars from, they would have been from English binoculars from World War II, and just as a gift for my dental work.
Sitting on the bus putting up with it.
Yes.
So the bus was the way you got around then?
Mainly into Wollongong, we used to use the bus, yeah. There were several bus services running from Ostermere to Wollongong. Dynes had a regular bus service, Hills. The Prices had a bus which used to run rather locally. There was Agnew's bus. There was quite a few buses. Of my earlier day, I remember going to church. We used to go to church in Thirroul, to the Catholic Church in Thirroul. And there was a gentleman lived over in North Ostermere, just off Ostermere Street, and his name was Jack Price. And he had a beautiful, lovely old bus. And that bus had a lot of timber work through it, chrome, wind-up windows. I guess it was about a 1948, would have been a 1940s model bus, but it was a very beautiful bus. And he used to pick us up at 7 o'clock from Moore Street or outside Keswick Guest House and take us to Thirroul. And Jack would sit in the bus until the end of Mass, and then we'd all come back, and then he'd take us back out. One week it was 7 a.m. and the next week it was 9 a.m. So, but that... Apparently, that particular bus, I asked some of the elderly gentlemen from Green's bus service who were looking after the rail while the rail was down, and I asked them about this Jack Price's bus, and he said, well, I believe the Dines brothers got hold of the bus after Jack retired, and they had it in at their yards for several years, and apparently the bus, they thought, had gone to a museum. But I haven't been able to trace where that museum was. I know for sure, Dines have said, it's definitely not in the bus museum in Sydney, but it was a beautiful bus.
And did you catch the bus to school?
We did catch the bus to school, yes, and we'd catch the bus from Ostermere on the main road, and the price was a halfpenny. It was a halfpenny there and a halfpenny back, and quite often on the way home, if I was feeling a little bit hungry, I would spend the halfpenny and buy myself some lollies and walk home. But it was a rather long walk up Kennedy's Hill. Was a bit of a climb in those days when you were a 5 or 6 year old, but we used to take the bus to school, and sometimes we'd even catch the train. But we would need a ticket for that, so, and our station master Tom Eady was a very strict station master, and if you didn't have your fare, you were in trouble.
And so let's describe Before you went to school, it was family activities around the house, I suppose.
Yeah.
But when you got to school and there were school holidays, describe what you did in school holidays as a family of kids growing up.
Oh, as a family of kids growing up, our school holidays would have been up to the Blue Mountains. So in those days, we didn't have a car. We would, my uncle had had the guest house, Neil Lett. Neil would either drive us or lend us his custom line Ford. He had a new custom line Ford. And it would take us up to the Blue Mountains, the family, and drop us off. We'd take all our blankets and sheets and everything like that, and we would hire a house for a week or even maybe a fortnight. And those houses would have Wentworth Falls and Lura, Blackheath, Katoomba, all the way, and lots of those houses are still there today. And then we would do bush walks. We'd walk all around. We've done at a very early age. I would have done the cliff walk. which was very scary at the time, cut into the cliff. But having older brothers and sisters, and Dad used to be with us, taking us up there, and we did lots and lots of walks. Because in those days, although they did know the local, they did have a friend who was the local bus driver, believe it or not, and they lived up there, so we used to take the bus a bit. And the other thing, we used to go to the movies there. I remember going to the movies in the main street of Katoomba. We also cutting firewood. Up there, we used to cut the firewood for the fire. We always had in the houses we had was fires, beautiful open fires. So we would cut timber, and So they were
probably winter holidays. Is that right? What about the summer holidays? Was that summer, in Ostomy?
Or did you go away? We went away a lot. I know. Dad acquired a 1950 Morris Oxford, I guess, around about 1954-55, and we went up a couple of trips up to the Snowy Mountains in the days when the Snowy Mountains scheme was being built, and we used to follow cars around. And Land Rovers used to go, and we used to go to Talbingo and Tumut 1 and Tumut 2 on a tour, and that would leave various parts of the Snowy Mountains in so we'd go through the power stations and all, visit the sites that were going to be flooded, and the churches, and because Dad was a mechanical construction inspector with the Electricity Commission. So he always had an interest in power stations and dams, because during the war, Dad put in the turbines at Burrinjuck Dam. That was a hydro-type turbine, and I think it was either 16 or 30 megawatts that generated. But a story there was they were bringing in one of the transformers down the Burrinjuck Road, and that day it would have been just dirt road. And the truck overbalanced, and the transformer ended up down the side of the cliff, and it's still there to this very day.
Never to be retrieved.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. But in Austenmere ourselves, we not so much we didn't have to wait till holidays, but we would go down the beach, and the beach was a very big part of our lives. Learning to swim there, and was always the pools were lovely and clean to swim in, with the water flushing through all the time with the high tide, and there were two big pools and then another rock pool cut in, which was always nice to
three pools. And who taught you to swim?
Oh, well, there was a gentleman down there, a famous lifesaver and Austenmere identity by the name of George Luck. Now, George, he taught us to swim, my brothers, and he taught my sister too. And, George's method was pretty basic. You'd throw you in and then tell you to dog paddle.
But
it worked. Yes, we're all good. We were all excellent swimmers, and no one ever drowned. And it might have got taken out in a rip or two, but it was.
Was it in your? Would your parents go to the beach as well? Was that a real feature of, or was it just the kids when they were growing up?
Oh, mainly just the kids. My mother used to take us down when we were very young, and I've got lots of photos of my sisters and that, because having four older sisters and an older brother, we spent a lot of time on the beach and walking around the rocks and around Bell's Point also, when I was a teenager, or not a teenager, but still going to primary school, when a storm used to hit on the beach and all the people from Sydney were down, they used to have their Parkinson's drink bottles, and they were on the, and as soon as a storm hit, they'd drop and leave all their bottles, and as kids we used to go and collect all the bottles and probably make £2, which was quite a bit of money.
And what about sport? Did you play? You had the beach, and was it? Mm. Did you play sport?
The sport that I done was mainly with the school, with the primary school. Yeah, we used to play rugby league, and we'd go around to all the ovals. I remember playing at Scarborough, and I remember playing at Clowes Park, and particularly the Thurool Oval, and. And now the gentleman that used to teach us was Mr. Lockery from Thurool. And we played a lot of school sport. And then one of the things that the school did too was we had St. Patrick's Day, which was a big day in Wollongong, and it was a holiday. We used to have a school. The nuns used to give us a holiday for the St. Patrick's Day, and we often used to. There was a gentleman that bought out some band members from Kira Boys High, and the cadets, and we would practice our marching around the oval, and with the cadets with the drums blaring, and but anyhow. When it came to the day, I think we got second place. We didn't quite get the first place, yes.
Sorts of celebrations, were there other celebrations, regular celebrations, that you recall in that you watched or were part of in Austenmere?
The other celebrations that we used to have was the celebration of Anzac, commemoration of Anzac Day. That was always a big day, being in the Cubs and the Scouts. We used to assemble up at the station, Austenmere Station, and we would march down, and they would bring they'd have band members, so they'd bring out one of the local bands, and the local all the RSL, and in those days there was World War One and World War Two people used to march, and we'd march all the way down to the Senator and past the Scout Hall, and then for the commemoration there, and that was always a big celebration in Austenmere. Mm. I've since attended the a couple of celebrations at the Scout Hall, which my grandfather Donald McCaskill led. He actually submitted the plans and supervised the building of the Austenmere Scout Hall, and we've got a few newspaper clippings of the Progress Association being involved. And
I think it's just turned 80. I think it was 80. Yes, was it 80? Yes, the Scout Hall in Austenmere.
Yeah,
I think you were a cub and then a scout?
Yes, I was a cub and a scout, yes, like my brother. And I attended the 75 year one, and then I attended the 90 years. Wow. So it was 90, 2013 was 90 years that the cubs and scouts and guides had been in Austenmere. Mm-hmm. And
incredible. Yeah. It's quite... Yeah. Have you got any comments to make about the networks of association in Austenmere? Because there were scouts, but you've mentioned the RSL, that's another one, but there were a number of clubs and associations. Yeah. Were your family or were you involved with those?
My family was involved with the Progress Association in Austenmere, and with that Progress Association, the family have in their possession a tray, which was presented to my grandmother I'll just have a look here.
Don's got lots of papers, and we're going to come back and talk about his photographs. So if you've got photographs of that, we'll maybe come back in another interview to talk about that. So there was a progress association from very early on, if your grandmother was involved in it.
That's right, that was 1919 that she was actually presented with that, but they were very active in that Progress Association in getting things done,
and I think there's still a Progress Association actually in Austin.
There probably could be. Yes, there's still some elderly ladies there that are still active.
And was your family involved with the RSL?
Not so much the RSL. We did have my grandfather's brother, John McLaren Lett. He enrolled from Austenmere for the First World War, and he went away, and he went away, and but unfortunately he was killed in Passendale at the Polygon Racecourse. His name is on the
cenotaph.
And but before he went away to the First World War, he had also been away to the Boer War, so he had actually done service in the Boer War and survived that. But Jack, he also put the first ladder up to Sublime Point. So he put the ladders up to Sublime Point, and he also carved up to near the top, he also carved some steps into the sandstone.
Tell us about the path to Sublime Point. Is that something else that you... Was that a holiday ritual?
Oh, yes. Our Sublime Point, we would hike up to Sublime Point and take a picnic lunch, snacks, and have lunch... approximately halfway up on the second flat, sometimes sitting on the massive rock, which is 3 to 4 metres round and over a metre and a half high. And then climbing up the ladders was always special, as the original, as I said, were built by John McLaren, or Jack, Uncle Jack, as my mum used to call him, my mother's uncle. And... on reaching the top, we would have sandwiches, buy a drink, ice cream from the kiosk, which was always operating, and a favourite way home would be follow the track along the top, the Bulleye Tops, to the lookout, then walk down Bulleye Pass. Not dangerous in those days. Arriving at the first couple of houses coming down on the left-hand side, we would stop at our auntie Phil McCauley's house. And she was one of the Thoreau Macaulays. She was Phyllis Bath. She married my dad's brother, Wally. So we'd stop there for a cup of tea and scones and cream. And she was a wonderful cook. Particularly, she made a wonderful fruitcake. And so we'd have the fruitcake and the scones and have a bit of a rest after our massive hike up to Sublime, along the top, halfway down Bulleye, three quarters of the way down, and that particular house is still there today too. And it's about the second house from on the left hand side as you come down. The house belonged to her parents, and we often used to visit there because that went all the way back through the bush down the creek, and we'd spend a lot of time there too. Then on walking to the bottom of Bulleye Pass, we would catch the bus and take the bus home to Oceania Parade.
I've just visited, I think I mentioned to you on the way down to interview you, I've stopped at Sublime Point. Tell me about your recollections of what the landscape was like then, and also going along the top of the escarpment and then down Bulleye Pass. Seems to me that there's been quite a lot of change in terms of just the flora, really.
Yeah. Yes, the the area below the pass, as is still pretty thick there, and quite healthy bushland. There used to be wonga pigeons through there, and also there was another little bird that was pretty rare, and it's still building nests, because I went up in the Gibson track with my brother only 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. We found a few nests, and mm-hmm. so that was quite... I'll think of that little bird in a minute. The top of Sublime Point is kept pretty much the same as it was for the last 60 to 70 years. The kiosk is still intact in virtually in its original format. My mother told me that they did put the fence along there, though, way back in the 1930s because they were people were claiming their cars, pushing their cars over there for claiming insurance, so that you can actually still see today the plaque that the NRMA, they donated the fence and put the fence there to stop the cars. But on saying that, I never did see any old cars over there, and we used to diverge off the track and head left and right, and spend a lot of time up in the bush. Also, I think my mother had on that track closest to the... there was a track, actually, from Sublime Point. You could actually walk still in the bush, stay in the bush. You didn't have to walk out on the road from Sublime Point to Bulleye Lookout. Mm-hmm. And she did have a name carved in the sandstone, but I've never been up there to look for it.
I think someone said you could go the other way too. You could go towards Coaldale and Scarborough.
Yes, I believe that.
I didn't know about that. Today up at the top of Sublime Point there were some walking trails, and one of them was that one.
The
Gaimere lilies are still there.
Oh, they're still thriving. Yes. Oh, that's right. Yes. And the monkey vines are still there. We used to swing on the monkey vines. They were a big, thick vine. Probably 50 feet out into the trees, and never ever came off one, or one never ever gave away, but they're still
and
around.
The leeches are still there.
And the leeches, yes. And you can still, and the stinging nettle too, you still got to watch out for the stinging nettle either side.
So getting up to, from home in Oceania Parade, you'd go up Ascot Street, and then you'd get to Foothills Road where you'd join the track to Sublime Point. Do you remember Asquith Street? There was a mine. Do you have any recollections of the mine, Ostermere Mine?
There seemed to be a lot of mining activity in Ostermere. And as you were heading up Asquith Street from the railway station, if you took the three corners from the railway station and looking towards the Rural, just past where the Maguire family, where the Maguires and the Englishes lived, just to the left there, 200 metres, there was a sheer cliff, and that had coal wash all the way down the cliff. So obviously they'd been dropping coal down that particular.
So that's that to the cliff. South of the bridge.
You go up Asquith Street,
right?
Up Asquith Street, and you'd follow it around, and then and it's actually on the Hill Street side of the road.
Okay.
It was a very sheer cliff,
oh.
and it was all quite extensive coal wash through
wow.
there, and then we had the Ostermere. We had the Ostermere. When growing up in the 1950s, Ostermere was still operating with pit ponies and all. It was only a very small operation compared to Thirroul's massive Excelsior number two, which closed in the Excelsior, which also closed in 1962. There was evidence of coal mining all over Ostie, and as I said about the Asquith Street side of the cliff running up to Hill Street. So that cliff ran up to Hill Street. There wasn't any houses there then, but they're built on the top of Hill Street.
Yes.
And the third bend from the railway bridge, an entire cliff of coal wash, as I said, and also steel cogs and axles, cast wheels, and remnants could be found on the creek edges of the creek gully on Station Parade, just before Clowes's Park. So there's a little gully down just before you get to Clowes's Park on the left-hand side, and there was all sorts of mining equipment in there, cogs and all the steel remnants. And there was also supposedly a tunnel or a shaft running from that part of Ostermere over to North Ostermere, but I haven't found anybody to verify
that. The historic, the first settlement of Ostermere, the town, was over at North Ostie, because it was settled there because of the jetty.
And the
coal came down Aroa Line near that culvert near Railway Avenue.
And
it went across to... to the jetty near Headlands Hotel. And then when the railway line was opened, I haven't got to the bottom of why the township, the station was put where it is. I haven't got to that part of the research. The station was put at where Ostermere is now, and the subdivision and the streetscape was built then. But you're quite right. That would have been industrial heritage over on that other side of Ostermere, because that's actually where it first started.
And then the Ostermere, the actual Ostermere pit was just up Asquith Street and off to your right. Head into... And that was still open and operating when...
If you saw pit ponies, you were walking up there for a bit of, you know... Exploration.
Yes. We've also studied when Excelsior closed down too. We studied Excelsior quite closely also.
A bit of research.
But you used to, when you were very young, we wandered all over Ostermere.
And who were your friends? Who were you doing that with?
Oh, well, a lot of the time with my brother and his friends. But also with, I had two friends that were pretty, very close, Ivor Sidorenko and Carl Hibbert. And
were they school friends?
One was a school friend, Carl I went to school with, the real school, but I was also in Cubs and Scouts with them. So, and Ivor only lived up the lane, where Carl lived over on Mountain Road, over there. And, so we did... lots of things. One of the things we done was the bike riding. We used to ride our bikes, and one particular time we decided we'd ride up to Cataract Dam when we were in primary school. And so Ivers and Carl and I set out, and off we went, and we pushed our bikes up Bulleye Pass, and we got over to the dam there, and we had sausages on our barbecue. And Carl tells the story whereby I had a these people from Sydney had their they were trying to get the barbecue to go. In those days, they were only fire. Mm-hmm. You had to get the fires going, and so I got their fire going for them. And then they
good
gave
scout.
Good scout, yep. And in reward, they gave me a big piece of steak. So
you wouldn't forget that.
No. So we shared that. So and then on the way back, we would ride all the way back, and coming down Bulleye Pass, the brakes used to, particularly if you had the back pedal brake, would overheat. So we'd have to stop halfway and let them cool off, and then we tried it again, but we end up walking down the last little bit. But that was quite an adventure to ride your bike. And see, in those days, you could do those sorts of things, but not today. You wouldn't dare try and
so
ride.
So, did you ride your bikes? Along the coast.
Up Foothills Road, and
what would you find up there? What were your recollections of what was up? Out of the township, really, underneath the escarpment.
There was a pig farm up there. There was actually a pig farm off to the right on more Buttonshaw Drive than Foothills Road. Mm. And, a pig farm. And it apparently, my brother said that the original Sublime Point track used to go up that way, up around that. And that was the Maguire's parents, the old Maguires, they had one of the only houses just up there. That would have been the only house within 500 or 600 metres, right up the very top where Asquith met Buttonshaw Drive. There was a home there. And when I was a child, they were still living in there. And but up there was fruit trees and orchards all the way along to Coaldale. And we had also blackberries. There was plenty of blackberry picking, so we'd take the billy up there and a couple of planks and put them down and collect them. There was also up the heights too. There was a lot of squatters or like shanty houses up there too, and there was lots of those there. And,
well, did they have families living there? Were the kids at school with you?
Yes, yeah, there was one there. There was one family there that used to go to our school down in Thoreau. And they had lots of children. And
was the bus running then?
Oh, no. They'd have to walk. No, you'd have to walk.
There was a bus eventually.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Not in my time, no. No, they never ever, nobody ever was game enough to take a bus up.
And there's a timber yard, I think.
Yes, there was a timber yard. Yeah, I believe there was one in Ostermere, but the one that I remember is more towards Coaldale. And there's a shed still there today, which was part of the timber mill, and they've turned it into a house.
Did you know anybody that worked in the mine and also in the timber mill and the pig farm? Do you know those families?
No, I didn't know.
Don't have any names.
In the mine, the mine. Let's see. No, I didn't know anybody that actually. It was more. The production wouldn't have been that great by the stage that I was there.
Your father worked. Where did he work?
He worked at He started out with the. He was at Tallawarra Power Station, and before that, Port Kembla Power Station, and before that, he served his time at ERNS. He served his time as a fitter and turner at ERNS, and then he worked with the public services or public power department, I think they called themselves, and that took into the old Port Power Station.
Right, so he was always heading south to Wollongong to go to work.
Except in the earlier days. At one stage there, before he did that, he was a mechanical engineer. He was an engineer working on cars in Bulleye. Mm. And there was a garage there. And I've still got his set of encyclopedias, and it says modern cars of today. But it was produced in about 1900 and must have been around about 1930 it would have been, because the cars there are all, it's a marvellous set of books on all those. Like 1928 Chevs and all those DeSantos and all those cars. Mr. Miner's garage it was that he
in Bulleye,
and that it's opposite the hotel, the Bulleye Hotel, and actually I can still point out
the
facade is still today. Yeah,
there were two garages in Ostermere. Do you recall those? Or more.
Yes, yeah.
Tell us about those. And we need to come back. I'm interested to ask you about where your friends' fathers were. I'm assuming it's fathers who are working rather than mothers.
Yeah, yeah.
Were people working in Ostermere, or were they leaving each day and going? Where were they going? And what was the economy like, you know?
Yeah. The economy was certainly bouncing along. Everybody was in total employment, and I had my mother's cousin. He used to be in charge of a department store in Sydney, and he used to travel by train every day. Albert was his name, and he used to take the train up to Sydney every day. The local, the steelworks and the AIS BHP, that was one of the main employers, and the coal mines too. Yes, yeah. When you say that, quite a few boys from Ostermere went on to work in the mines. Bernie Garrethy, like my group, which started work around about 1966, there was a lot of those working in the mines. Bernie Garrethy, he worked in the mine. One of the Perkis boys worked in the mine. Dennis Patterson, worked in the mine.
But not Ostermere, Mike, because by then it was closed.
No, that's so right. Yes,
going to Bulleye or Corrimal or whatever.
And Colcliffe.
Colcliffe,
yes. Colcliffe was still... I had a brother-in-law too that worked out at the Coke Works, the Illawarra Coke. And my brother actually worked after he'd done his time at... he was an accountant at AIS. He then... was the accountant out at Illawarra Coke.
At Colcliffe.
Mm. Yeah, and then he went on to be the project accountant for Vickery Mine Venture up at Gunnedah for Rio Tinto.
Mm.
I went to work at the steelworks. As a metallurgist.
So there was a mix, wasn't there? People are talking about holidaymakers with holiday homes, and then there are the people who are working in the services, policemen and teachers and health workers.
Yep.
And then there are the people who are working in the local industry, which is resource-based, iron and steel and coal.
So it's
quite a mix. Yep. It's not just, a coal mining village, some of the villages further north were a little bit like that.
And
railway town, Thirroul, but Ostermere wasn't like that either. So it's quite interesting.
There was quite a few teachers. My sister went on to, but Ruth, she trained at Wagga Teachers College, and then one of her friends too, Margaret Maguire, or Margaret Starling as she is today, she went to Wagga Teachers College, and then there was Mr. King. He was a school teacher over in North Ostermere, and he lived at North Ostermere.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was Mrs. Jagger. She lived next to Miss Blanche there. She was a school teacher. She worked with my sister at various places. When we were growing up, there was Mr. Hayes. He lived opposite us. Mr. Hayes, he was actually a coal miner, and he was a mine manager up at Cessnock Mine.
Mm-hmm.
So he would work up there for quite extended periods. And actually live up there and just come home.
He had sons that were your age?
Murray and Peter.
Mm.
Yeah, Murray Hayes and Peter. They were my brother's age, and they used to take shortcuts through our place and because the laneway to Moore Street, there was a shortcut, and they'd just zoom. And as they were going through, they'd pinch Dad's carrots out of his garden.
One of the things about Ostermere are the lanes, which is quite interesting. They had the Dunny Lanes in Ostermere, which, weren't everywhere. Mm. Sometimes, we should talk about those before septic.
There was the
night soil man.
Yeah, that's right.
And in Ostermere, there were lanes. Sometimes in other places, they just came down the side path. By the time Ostermere was laid out, there were lanes on both sides of Moore Street, actually.
Mm. Mm-hmm. That's right, yes, yeah.
And Back Lane and the Grove as well.
Yeah, and Yeah, our dog Maxie used to chase the dunny man down the lane, actually, as we used to call him.
I'm just looking to see whether I had other questions to ask you about. You were going to talk about... you were just looking up something then. I was going to talk to you about guest houses, that's right.
Oh, rightio.
Because the other thing that's interesting about Austin Mere is that it didn't have a hotel. Well, maybe you think it had a hotel, but unlike Thoreau, for example, and Coaldale. No, I don't know whether Coaldale's got a hotel or not. But a pub drinking hotel, you know.
Oh, yeah, shit. Oh, pub drinking hotel. Yes, well, the actual drinking hotel in Ostermere in the early days, there was three drinking places. One was the Headlands Hotel, or the Headlands Guest House, which had a bar there. And then there was the Ostermere Bowling Green, which had a bar there. Now, that Ostermere Bowling Green, that was a meeting place too. For Ostermere people, and the Ostermere RSL was always a meeting place too, but that was I remember when they built that. I remember the building that actually they pulled down to build that Ostermere
in Moore Street.
It was yes.
On the same site as
and the same current, site. Yes,
well, what's now the Church of England?
Yes,
that was the RSL.
Yes, yeah. And,
do you remember, I've asked everybody this and nobody recalls it, so you might, in the early press clippings, 1888, so the centennial of the founding of Phillip's arrival, Austin was celebrated the opening of the Bicentennial Hall.
No, Bicentennial Hall. I don't remember that. You might want to ask my uncle, my mother's brother, Donald McCaskill Lett, and he was born. Donnie was born. He's 90 years old, so.
But 1904, is that right? No, that's not right. He was 90, he must have been two. There wasn't actually a pub like Ryan's Pub in Thoreau or the hotel in Bulleye.
Enterprise. Ostermere was more a holiday village, and they didn't have a hotel.
But they did have all these guest houses. So tell us about your links to the guest house. Well, one guest house in particular, and then you lived opposite the Outlook, which was another guest house.
Well, generally, guest houses in Ostermere, when growing up in the 1940s and 50s in Ostermere, were a big part of the community. My grandparents started and built up the Keswick Guest House on a headland south and overlooking Ostermere Beach. They built and constructed a full-size bowling green and a tennis court. That was Ostermere's first bowling green. And and they actually constructed their tennis court by from Coaldale Heights. They used ants' nests. The termite dirt doesn't stick to your feet. So that was what the tennis court in that they constructed of. That was one of the earlier ones.
And so that went still there, but it's not a guest house now, is it?
Oh, no, it's not a guest house. No. Some doctors bought it, and before that, yes, my uncle sold that around about 1972, I suppose, 73 it must have been, that he sold. So they developed that guest house, and it had a billiard room, and when I was a child, we used to go down, and I would be able to have a bit of a hit and sort of do all the things that you.
I've talked to a lot of people, just in passing, about what the project, and many people have said, "Oh, my parents had their honeymoon at Austenmere at Keswick, or at the Outlook, and that the regular holidays for my family, and that there was a whole range of services. I mean, it was food, dining rooms, movie nights,
and, that's right, and dances too."
When was the heyday, do you think?
Oh, I think the heyday
before
would have been
your time.
Oh, that was still there were still lots of people coming to Keswick when I was very young, but probably before my time. Because there was lots of cricketers and all sorts of influential people used to judges, and but my uncle Don, he can give you a precise rundown of all those sort of people that used to come to Keswick. And I remember one when in my time, one that used to come that my uncle was very friendly with, and he was a professor, and he had done research and up there in New Guinea, and he had all these New Guinea artifacts, and I always found that very interesting. And
was the Outlook a guest house when you lived opposite?
Yes, it was. Yes, it was a guest house. It just and then they started to let individual rooms after right just before I left. There was two sisters actually owned it when I was there. Like Mr. and Mrs. Roberts had it before. And then they'd retired and lived next door to the Armstrongs.
And do you recall where other guest houses were?
Oh, yes, Headlands was another guest house built on the headland in North Austenmere. That was quite an extensive construction, and then there was another guest house that my auntie had, which is only about three doors down from Keswick, and that was called Lorne, L-O-R-N-E, and that belonged to my mother's eldest sister Gwen, and it was an ideal location because it was only two doors from it was only. Right, it was right on the beach, virtually on the beach.
The pool.
Yeah, and it's and that is that block of that was only demolished, or the house, the original was only demolished only a year or two ago, and now built on it is
a very amazing piece of modernist architecture.
Yes, that's it.
Like a spaceship has landed.
Yes. But it's quite.
Oh, so that's where Lawn was.
That was Lawn.
So that's about two up from the kiosk, really.
That's right. Yes. That was Lawn, and my mother's sister Gwen, she went on to be a nurse for a short period of time, and there was a photo in Culdale District Cottage Hospital in 1938 or something. Or in the 30s, anyhow, of her in uniform with all the staff at that particular time, that's still in the hospital out there, and then we have the Astra guest house next to Bell's Point, overlooking Austenmere Beach, and the Astra sign can be still seen on the lawn in front in cement, Astra, which is and that was a wonderful spot too. If you wanted beach views, the Astra was certainly
right on the spot.
Yep, and next to Bell's Point, overlooking Ostermere Beach. Bell's Point was previously owned by my grandfather, so granddad let actually owned Bell's Point, and but he eventually sold it back to the council.
Right, as a parkland.
Yes.
With all the coal stripes with the stripes.
That's right. And and then there was Bonheur. Now Bonheur was
another guest house.
And this time Bonheur was actually in the Grove, and that was owned by Miss Powell, Powell. She owned Bonheur, and it was on the Coaldale side of the Grove, about 4 doors up from number 7, the Grove.
You've got number 7, Oceana Parade. You've got number 7, the Grove, stories about that we haven't heard yet, too. So Bonheur were nearly neighbours for number 7? They further along?
Two along. The nuns, there was nuns that had a house there. And they were Sydney nuns, and Bonheur would be next door. Okay. But Bonheur had a beautiful garden, and my mother always said that she actually did a little bit of work there when she was 17 or so. Used to do a bit of work at Bonheur too, and then we've got. And then there was another guest house too on the corner of Oceana Parade and the highway on the Thirroul side, and that was owned by Mrs. Willis. They had that. That was only a very small one though. So lots and lots of guest houses, and so lots of people coming, and you would meet different people, and
And people coming for day trips as well. By car and by train. Do you want to talk about that? Okay. Is that something that you recall?
They used to come day trips. They used to come down to visit Ostermere, and they'd go to the to the beach. And I remember the Ostermere car park that the council owned had two entrances, and the council decided that they would charge for parking on Ostermere Beach. So at the time, Mr. Parker, another Ostermere family, or lived on Kennedy's Hill, actually, when I was growing up, and then they moved to Coaldale, and then they moved. But they had the kiosk at the particular time. Must have been after the Lux, or after the... there was another family there in that...
So George Luck, the swimming man...
Yeah.
His family had the kiosk as well.
Yes.
The franchise or
whatever. And they had it for many years. And I think it was his mother, mum and dad, I think, that would have had it initially. And and they used to serve Devonshire teas there on white tablecloths, and it was all... very, you know, more the that era. This is the early 1950s, late 1940s. And, but in my time, the kiosk was... the kiosk had a lot of slot machines in it, and it the ones which would go for $5,000 today, they were very beautiful machines, and it also, in my time, it had the... it had a ping pong table there too, so you could play ping pong.
So it was a bit of a youth centre, is it? Your recollection? It was a bit closed. I think I recall they closed off, they only just had the counter, and then it was closed off, and you could do ping-pong machines yeah, and...
that's right.
Ping-pong tables and yeah. kids hanging out on the steps and...
Oh, well, that's... Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, the steps there on the original.
There wasn't a youth centre. There wasn't anything really other than the Scouts.
Cubs and Scouts.
And the surf club.
That there was another place where we used to hang out too, which was purpose built, and that was built by Mrs. Bolan, and that was a brick on right opposite the beach. It was the newest shop or the only shop that was built when I was there, and that was a purpose. That was a milk bar, and that was a purpose built milk bar. And it had a jukebox in it, and playing all the 1950s hits. And you could go and have a milkshake there, and an ice cream, and lollies, and that sort of thing. Yeah, and she and it's now the news agent and post office combined. But back in those days, it was a very good place to be. You know. Music, lovely music, and
place to be seen.
So
there were other milk bars in. Tell us about that side of Ostermere, the main street with its shops going up to the station, and then other shops along the front as well.
Yeah.
Where did your mum do her shopping?
Oh, well, that's. The shopping, Ostermere was quite a vibrant town in those days.
So this is the 1950s, late 40s.
Late 40s, early 50s, yes. Mm. Yes. The shops...
there were... Yeah. General, you would be coming from Oceana Parade.
Yeah, yeah.
And where did she do it?
There was a general store, quite a big general store on the highway, and that was there was a Mr. Wilson there when I was, and he actually did home deliveries.
So on the highway, between Moore Street and Oceana Parade.
That's right. Yeah, okay. And there was also a cake shop there, also, and. And I'm pretty sure the fish and chip shop was there at one stage too. So there was three, but mainly the big was the general store there.
Right. Yeah. So the general store wasn't, I always thought it was in Moore Street.
And it went all the way, well, there's still more in Moore Street, but that one there went all the way back, and they had lots of... like if you wanted to buy grain and things like that.
Okay.
So they had bags.
So there was a co-op in Thurool, apparently. But Ostermere didn't have a co-op.
Co-op, no. But this store here, this general one there, they had lots of... they had lots and lots of... they had lots of...
So they had everything.
Yeah, they had everything.
So
yeah.
things and then, in bulk as well as food and haberdashery, that sort of stuff?
I know, that was around the corner at Tommy Hope's.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Tommy Hope's would have had, but I'll get on to him.
Yeah.
But coming down Kennedy's Hill, the fish shop eventually went to the shops down opposite the beach, and a lady there that operated that fish and chip shop for 20 or 30 years it was Mrs. Grunsell, Grunsel. And one of me mates must have been on the good side of her. And if he bought her a posy of Lantana, she'd give him a free packet of chips. But Ivor said he never got that treatment, and I never got that treatment. So
she was in the best spot in the whole world, I think.
Yes.
Opposite the beach.
Yeah. Opposite the beach, It was very, very popular.
Mm-hmm.
And and then next door to that was a milk bar. And then next door to that was another milk bar type. So you could go in there and sit down they would serve sandwiches and things like that. And my sister Ruth actually worked in one of those around about 1954, 4:55, or maybe even earlier than that. But yeah, so
quite a thriving
scene
along the main road.
But then other
services going up Moore Street.
Yep, yeah, and then going up Moore Street, if you start at Frank's Garage, I'll talk about the garages later. There's quite a few of those, but going up Moore Street, you had Frank's Garage, and then you had a Red Cross shop there, and ladies used to, it's now a bed and breakfast, but it used to be a Red Cross shop, and they would do crocheted work, and you could buy doilies and books and all sorts of things that they, and that was a Red Cross shop virtually all.
I think it was a library.
And a library too, a library, that's right, yes. And then we moved a little bit further up, and then we had a little bit further up is the chemist shop. So there was the chemist, and that chemist was Mr. Tyrrell's had the chemist, and they were a Rostermere family, and the Tyrrells.
So when you were a little boy, there was a chemist shop.
There was a chemist shop, yes. And even before my time, my sister's they had the Tyrrells, and they actually later moved next door and lived next door in a house next door when they didn't have the chemist shop, but by the time, and then Mr. Grew. Kevin and Patsy Grew had it there, and I actually worked for them for a little while, cleaning bottles and.
I thought you were going to say you did deliveries.
No deliveries. Just for a short period, I did that, but the smell got to me after a while. So I don't know what was in those medicines in those days, but but anyhow. And that then became a doctor's surgery for many years, and now it's something else now, I think. I'm not too sure what it is.
Yeah, I think it's a little moment. Business.
Little
a
business.
Little events, yeah. Maybe. Events or designs.
Designs,
like
yes, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, but the basic structure is still there. And then we move along a little bit further to the Scout Hall, where I said my grandfather done the plans and done the supervision and was part of the Ostermere Progress Association, which got that going. And then we go to the Church of England, rectory.
Yep.
Yes. My grandfather, I know he built that. Because
that's a brick building.
That was a brick building, in a Californian bungalow style. And
with a tennis court beside.
Yes, it had a tennis court. Yeah, and our living at number 7, we used to look onto that, the Scout Hall, the tennis court, and there's lots of trees then, and the yard was quite extensive in there. Yeah, my mother had some clippings in from the Mercury about Grandad building that in later years. In must have been about 1958. They must have had some sort of celebration for the church there, and and Mum had my Auntie Gwen that actually had the clipping cut out of the construction of the hall and built by Donald McCaskill.
Did he build the hall as well as the rectory?
They've always said that he had something to do with the hall, and he also
the Church of England was a hall that was a centre of many activities because it was leased out to, dance groups and view clubs, well, they weren't called view clubs then, but people, lots of community events happened in that Church of England Hall.
Yes.
And your grandfather...
He would have done the... on the church, he done some extensive renovations. And I was looking to find out, because they always said he built the church, but when I looked into the records on the Church of England's site on history, it said that there was a major renovation done in 1918, I think it was, and so which changed the bell tower and the entrance foyer.
Yes, that's right. They changed the entrance from one side to the other, I think.
That's right.
Or the front to the side.
Yes. Well, he would have done all that.
Oh, okay.
And I believe that he would have done the hall too.
And then next to the church is another shop.
Another shop, that's right. And that's had several owners. When I was there, it was a Mr. Scarrett. I think it was Mr. Scarrett. Anyhow, he used to drive down from Helensburg and... he used to have
He didn't live above the shop because there isn't a residence.
Yeah, well, I know porters used to live next door to the shop right next door to the shop or might have even lived in the back, but I think it was next door where they lived for many years. But this gentleman that had the shop in our time, he used to drive from Helensburg, I believe, and he was coming around the bends one time and a rock came down the cliffs and hit his... And he had a station wagon. He had a Peugeot station wagon. It must have been about a 1940-something model, a long one. And here's this dint right in the middle of his roof where the rock had came
down.
He was lucky.
I always say beware falling rocks and you wonder about what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
And what was that shop?
It sold flour but mainly when I was there it was a lolly shop, like you could buy lollies, drinks, that sort of thing. And actually, Mrs. Harris next door to me actually had the shop. They had it for a fair few years, and she would have just sold sugar and flour but not in big quantities and that, you know, and milk and that sort of thing. Yeah. And then, so that's still a shop of some sort now. And then we move on to the corner up on the laneway opposite, next door.
Opposite the RSL.
Yeah, no.
Opposite the car park.
There's a... And that belonged to... Miss Brown had that, and Miss Brown, they actually lived next door, two doors down from Keswick. The elderly ladies, they were when I, and they owned the premises there, and they had several people in there. But that used to be one of the first uses of it was a fruit shop. It was a fruit and vegetables there. Back in my sister's day, but in my day, it was a general store sort of thing, and you could buy a few things. And then next door to that was the post office, and Mr. Cook had that for many, many years. And Mum used to go up there and do a banking, and she used to bank our endowment there. Mm. And I remember getting a Commonwealth Bank money box from them, and one with the one of the nice boxes, tin boxes, and that post office too. And that had been there a long time. That's been there a long time.
And it's still there.
It's still got the
date. Little cluster of shops are still there, aren't they?
Yeah, and then another one of the longest serving. Shop owners, and there was a bloke by the name of Tommy Hope. Now Tommy Hope had it was more a general store too. So that was probably could have even been the main general store back in the 30s and the 40s.
So I don't know anything about that, his family. Do you know anything? Was that an old Austin family?
He was a very it was, but he was very elderly by the time. But once again, my uncle would be Don would tell you quite a few stories. But Tommy Hope did live in the Grove or behind. Yeah, he lived in one of those houses behind the police station.
Oh, okay, yeah, on the that's southern my side.
Yes.
Mm.
North
or south. Yes. Yeah, okay. So you get in off Hennings Lane.
Yes. Mm. That's right. Yeah.
Oh.
And he used to have a little old 1940 model like a ute thing, and it was.
Because I think he might have someone along there delivered.
Yeah, he would have delivered too. Yeah, Tommy Hope would have done deliveries. Mm. He probably would have been the main one
right.
in the town. He would have had haberdashery, and he would have had a bit of everything in there, what I remember. Mm. And
broken biscuits, I remember.
Yeah, yes, yes.
He
well,
could
I
buy a 5 pence, I suppose, or 2 tuppence worth of broken biscuits.
Mm, that's right. Yeah. Well, I used to get mine from Thoreau after school. There was a little shop opposite. For halfpenny, I think, or a penny. Yeah, you'd get a whole big bag of broken, brown paper bag of broken biscuits.
We're showing our age, I think, Don.
I think we may be, yes.
So then next to Tommy Hope
was the Illawarra Butcher Shop.
That's right.
Yeah, and the main butcher in there was a bloke, was Joe Hamilton. And he was the butcher there, and we'd go up there and, before school, I could get the meat or whatever we needed, and and that parts of the butcher shop is still there today, the freezer room, and
in the cafe.
Mm. And at that stage too, the Hamiltons used to live behind the butcher shop.
Oh.
Because there was their son was Gordon Hamilton, and he used to be friends of my brother,
right.
and. Gordon, and and then we moved up. Oh, I might point out that right next to the butcher shop is where my uncle Donnie Lett was born. So there's a little blue house. It's blue now today in 2014. It's painted blue, and the house is still intact. It's still pretty much the same. And that's where Donnie Lett was born. Yeah.
Did that stay in the family for a long time? House?
No, that was a rented house.
Ah, right.
That was a rented house. The house that stayed in the family was Wairina. That was our family home. That was where my mother and Donnie and all those were raised. And that was on Oceana Parade. Yeah, that was about 4 doors up from No. 7, Oceana Parade, Wairina. And my grandfather built that house, and that's where, and it had a large area under where he used to assemble all the frames, lots of the frames for the houses and that, in wet weather. And he could fit a fair few cars under there too. That was Wairina. But that was their rented house. And also they rented a house over in Thoreau, in Austenmere, in Mountain Road, right up near where Excelsior was. But before the railway bridge. There's a railway bridge in Mountain Road. It goes over the railway line. Well, it's the first or second house there. And my grandmother tells the story where she thought the... when she came... Because she came from New Zealand in 1900 and... around about 1908, I think, or 9. 1907, I think it was. And she...
As a child?
She came as a young married...
Right.
Yes, because my mother was born in Double Bay.
Right.
Or Watson's Bay.
Mm.
And and she lived there until she was about 12 months old or so. Then they came to Austenmere in 1912.
Do you know why?
Because there wasn't a lot of building activity going on there, and my grandfather seen the opportunities to come down here to build, which did prove quite successful. Mm. He was a very... extremely successful builder. Mm. Not only did he build in Austenmere, but he also built in around in Wollongong, around Gladstone Avenue. I can see a lot of Gladstone Avenue. I can see a lot of
his houses,
the type of houses that he built with his group. Mm. And
so let's go back to we need. I think that's a whole other story about why the Letts ended up in Austenmere. But let's just finish up Moore Street, because I think we've been talking for quite a long time.
Yeah.
So let's finish Moore Street, and then we'll make a time to come back and talk some more. Mm. So we're up to your family's rental property next to the butcher.
Yeah.
And then you go up a little bit further. Yeah. And we come to the Methodist Church.
Yes, yeah.
And then further up again, there's another cluster of shops.
Shops, that's right, yeah. the cluster of shops up there was, the first one was the barber shop. So that was a barber shop, and I think they might have had a bit of SP booking going on out the back too, and a billiard room. And
that was another place to hang out, wasn't it?
That would have been another one for men, yes. But Phil McLeod was the... he was the barber at the time, and he used to cut my hair quite often, and he actually sold my mother a lottery ticket, and she won a lottery with it for £100. Now, £100 in those days would have been about 4 weeks' wages, so or more. So that's quite a bit of that was quite a bit of money, and came in handy with a family of my sisters.
He'd be popular.
Yes. And and then next door to barbershop was Pop Hallowell's shop. Now Pop Hallowell, he lived virtually next to the church and between the barbershop. He built a new type of house there. Yeah, relatively new for Ostermere. We didn't have too many new houses built back in the '50s, but they built it, and he retired there, and passed away many years later. But Pop Hallowell, it had a mainly lollies and drinks.
Milkshakes.
That was the bus
stop there.
That's right.
So that was always a good spot to pile off the bus and go and get a feed of lollies.
And then next door to that, there was eventually a hairdressing salon. That was Marge, I think, was a lady, had that for many years. So that was a hair. And then opposite that was the bakery, and opposite the railway station. And that bakery, my sister, June, my third eldest sister, June said that she remembers that the they actually used, the Agnews built that, and they used second-hand bricks. And then they painted it all white.
It's
it all came up.
Building,
came
actually.
Up. They'd done a beautiful job on it. You know,
and the sheaves of wheat on the front.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, they did very well.
I remember I used to go up there. If we run out of bread, our bread was actually delivered from Thoreau by Smiths. Smiths had a bakery in Thoreau, and they used to deliver also. And a bloke by the name of Bruce Cambridge, and Mr. Smith and his mother owned it. And then Bruce Cambridge actually used to work for them, and he used to deliver the bread. But Agnews, they've done a wonderful job of that building.
They baked locally.
I used to go up to school before school and get the bread, and I could see them bringing it out of the fire. And it was always a lovely smell, that fresh bread that they'd bring out. Talking about the baker shop, they had a block of land behind the what was the RSL or the church. Now there was a spare block of land, and that had all the bread carts and saddles, and they used to keep their horses there for when they used to when the bread was delivered by horse and cart. Beautiful painted up old bread carts and saddles and all that there, and it was quite a big shed. There would have been three or four of these in there, and but my sisters tell me that it was also a pony paddock too. They used to have the horses in there too. That was there. But as we were coming down, they were a little bit further down, then we came across another butcher shop, and the butcher was a gentleman by the name of Teddy King, and he and his family lived behind the shop there. And one of the girl, she went to school with one of my sisters.
Right.
But that was before.
Which butcher did you use?
Oh, we used to use Joe Hamilton, the Illawarra Meat Company. We mainly used to use that one.
It was kind of like your families went to one supplier. and they didn't actually go anywhere else. You know, you're a client of that butcher or that greengrocer or, you know, the general store.
Yeah.
Quite interesting, really. Yeah. You're all very loyal.
Yes, yes. Might have been different in the 40s. Maybe they supported... Maybe they supported the one across the road, but generally it was always,
Joe Hamilton's
butcher shop. And, and I think at one stage too, that might have become a dental surgery.
I think that was the next one,
the little one.
Opposite the church, the Methodist church, there was a dentist.
A dentist. Oh, rightio.
Who lived in the Grove.
Grove, yes, yeah. Oh, rightio.
Underneath seven.
Oh, righto. Ah, yes.
But I don't know what it was before it was the dentist, because it probably was something before then.
Yeah. I'm trying to think what it was, but I mainly only knew it as a dentist, and then he moved out, and then it became something else. But
Ashford, I think his name was that dentist.
Oh, righto. Ah.
I don't know where that came from.
Anyway. So, we had Donald, I know. Another friend of ours, Donald McGregor, he lived next door to that shop, and he was in the Scouts and Cubs with us. Donald McGregor, there was McGregor's, and there's also Coffey's lived there. And next door to the bakery was a Merritt's, Mr. and Mrs. Merritt, and they had daughters, Helen.
School teacher.
Yeah. Another school teacher,
And then a policeman, the police station further down from where the RSL was.
Yes, that's right. There were actually the police station, they built, and Mrs. Tuck lived next door to the RSL or the car park to she lived there. And that, I think that house is still intact too. And Mrs. Tuck was a lovely woman. She used to do a lot of washing, and because of our family in the early days, with seven in the family, Mum had help. And Mrs. Tuck used to help. She was a wonderful woman. And then when you went to the police station, not the police station where it is now, but it was across the road. It was right opposite the Church of England.
Oh.
So...
On the other corner.
On the other corner, yeah. So it's on the other corner now, but it was on the original corner there. And that originally, that was a two-storey place. And Grandfather, so I don't know how he would have done it, but back in the 1920s or 30s, he actually cut the building in two and shifted one storey down and made a house out of it. Down the other one on the spare block of land must have been, I think would probably be next door. But but that was the police station there, and there was always a lock up in the back.
Yes.
And and he was he had a motorbike and a sidecar at one stage, and then in 1958 he would have had a 59 Holden, I think it might have been. Police car. The actual car was a 59, 59 Holden.
Is it going memory. Further down?
Oh, further down, yeah, down Moore Street.
Yes.
Down Moore Street, yes. There were several other people lived in those houses there.
There weren't any more shops, though.
No, but there was a doctor's surgery there. Yeah, Dr. Gertie's, I think, or McKinnon.
Towards the corner.
Towards the corner, yes. And
was there ever anything in your memory on the corner?
No, just a nice eight-pointed, like a round sort of a building, and that's still there today. The windows, like an octagonal sort of a thing.
Beside work was a surgery.
No, not in my... It was always... I think we knew the people that lived there. He was more my brother's age and sister's age. I can't recall at the moment. But, I think that might have been... It was quite a nice building, quite a substantial building. And, But
okay, I think we've dredged your memory made you do a lot of talking. Will we call it off for today?
Come
back to... on another day, but before we go, I'm interested to hear from you what Well, your great-grandfather was attracted to Ostermere for business reasons, but many people are attracted to the place. What is it that we've now talked about what it was like, and you're still in touch with Ostermere, so you know what it's like now. Mm. What is it that is keeps the memory of Ostermere and the experience of Ostermere in people's minds, do you think?
Well, growing up there, it was no other place like it, really, with the beach and the hikes up to Sublime Point and the lagoon and all the bush areas where we used to go through, and the kiosk and Bell's Point and the headlands, and just a beautiful area, and having such that contact over 100 years is really, it gives us a really heartfelt belonging, you know, that considering you can go up and down every street and name everybody that actually lived in there. So,
It is a sense of belonging, and it's, is it the landscape that also has the sense of community and a sense of landscape, a distinctive landscape?
Yes. There's no other beach area which is so confined to a lovely little village where you've got the headlands on both sides, the beach, the next beach, and then the boat sheds. And, it's such a pretty area. And then you look down from Sublime Point, or if you're in the town, you look up to Sublime Point, and the mountains are always there. And, I've still got a sister living in Ostermere, and Jeanette, she was actually born up two doors up from Wairina, it's Sister Melons, she was born there, and my other sister June was born in number 29, or they were residing in number 29 Oceania Parade when June was born, and Jeanette lives over in Curtin Road now, and she's been there for, Jeanette will be 80, coming up to 80 in a year or two. She did a nursing, had done a nursing in Sydney at St. Joseph's at Auburn, and then she done a lot of obstetrics down at Hobart, the hospital down in Hobart. And even when she was in Sydney, she used to travel backwards and forwards. And so she's still there today. I visit her on a regular basis.
Go and talk to her as well. It's interesting that there wasn't a Catholic church or school in Ostermere.
Well, they did. They did buy a block of land next door to... The Catholic Church actually bought a block of land next door to the Outlook. Oh. And the bank actually, I think, eventually bought it, or they built flats there. And, I had another friend that lived over there, Chris Hode. They came from Fiji. And his father was a bank manager. And that was a bank house they built there eventually, and that's next door to Keynes in Oceania Parade. Mm. So the Catholics were going to build, but for some reason they already had one at... they already had a church that fully... at Thrill, St. Michael's Thrill, and then they had one at Coaldale. Mm. They built one at Coaldale, and they also had one out at Clifton. There was one at Clifton up in the old town.
That's right.
And then there was one at Stanwell Park. And at Stanwell Park around on the way to the beach on the left there, and one at Bulleye. Yes. But we went to St. Michael's Thrill, and my sisters actually... When they went to school, they used to go to school in the back of the church. There was no school. We were one of the first. The school was opened in 1950, built in about 1951.
Just in time for you.
Yeah, for me. Yes, yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Okay, Don, I think we'll say this is interview number one, and we'll just finish it, and then we'll make some time to come back and talk again about all the things we didn't discuss today.
Righty-o,
thank you.
Yeah. Yep, thank you.